views on this program are opinions of dentist industry experts and do not constitute personal financial advice. This program is furnished by Dentist Advisors, a registered investment advisor. You're tuned into Dentist Money Industry Expert Series. Now here's your host, Reese Harper.
Welcome to the Dentist Money Show. I'm your host, Reese Harper, here on the Industry Expert Series in Phoenix, Arizona, with a friend of mine, Mr. Bill Owens. In the office, we do occasionally call him the legend, Bill Owens. Okay? He's a legend in Arizona. I told him I wouldn't call him the legend, but we're going to do that. So, Bill, I want you to go ahead and just introduce yourself. It is tax time right now. It's crazy. So it's been awesome to be able to take an hour and meet and get an interview done. I think you guys do a swell job, and I think this is something that'll be really helpful for our listeners. So thanks. How about you give some people some background and try to do it in an optimistic way during tax time, okay? It's hard to do right now, right? You're busy.
Welcome. Yeah. My 6-year-old thinks I'm a legend. That's about it. But thanks for inviting me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The name of our firm is Owens and Bondell.
Okay.
And yep. It's actually three people, two names. We're very efficient that way. But my brother Steve Owens, myself, and then our partner Matt Bondell. The firm itself started 38 years ago out of my dad's house at the time. He had a desk set up in the bedroom there. There were 13 clients.
Oh, wow.
And it was a breakoff from a firm in the Bay Area, and he was in charge of the Arizona group of clients. He ended up a couple years later buying them out, taking charge, and it grew from there.
Okay.
Over the years, the dental specific part of it developed more as a result of referrals. Most dentists know each other. They talk shop a lot. And one referral led to another. I think he developed a good reputation for how he did business, what he did, the fee structure. The services that we provided. There wasn't really another dental-specific accounting firm here in the Valley that was doing what we did. Matt Bondell came on about 20 years ago. Steve came on a few years after that. I came on a few years after that. And so the three of us now are the principals. We've got 18 other employees, a few others that come in during tax season. And today work with about 350 offices.
It's crazy.
Throughout Arizona, a few in Utah, a few in New Mexico, a few in Texas, a few in Nevada.
But that's enough. That's a lot.
It's good.
It's enough to keep you busy.
It's good. We're a basic firm. A lot of CPA firms will do wealth management. A lot of them will do practice management. We'll do brokering practice sales.
Yeah.
And we have some colleagues that we know across the country that do similar work that we do in terms of tax and accounting that have ventured into these other areas. We have not done that. We've kept to the nuts and bolts, the core
of accounting,
the core of what we do. We do what you do and do it great.
I think that's great advice, man. Let's talk a little bit about using all this expertise and experience to break out a few things that you see as general mistakes that have to do with accounting and taxes that you feel like dentists make, things that you feel like people. Maybe the most common issues that come up.
I would say, in no particular order.
Yeah.
As these, we talk about a couple of these things. One is the dental software. Mostly, it's used as Dentrix. EagleSoft is out there, SoftDent, and there's a few other smaller ones. But mostly, those are the big dogs, and they're good at what they do in terms of scheduling, but. Those reports need to be integrated in some way with that outside bookkeeping aspect of what you're doing. Yes, you're writing checks all the time. Your debits are coming out of your bank account all the time. You're swiping your credit card who knows how often every week and paying for all this stuff. And you're making deposits, maybe not always on a regular basis. So number one, using the dental software to compare things like what have we collected today based on what's come across the counter compared to what we've deposited in the bank. Mm. So just looking at your bank deposits and say, oh, boom, there's my income, not good.
It's not good for a lot of different reasons, right? What are some of those reasons that it's not good?
Well, I think the number one reason, I think, is the comparison between what your software says you're collecting and what you're depositing in the bank. Let's say they match perfectly. Green light, good to go. Let's say they don't match. What do you do? Let's say you've deposited more than you collected. What's going on there? Let's say the worst case scenario, you've deposited less than you said you're... Well, where's the money? It's either walking out the door with somebody. Maybe it's walking out in your pocket. You don't know it. Maybe you got a problem with your software. Maybe the person up front doesn't know how to key stuff in. Well, if they're messing up the most basic money transaction of all, which is collecting the money, you're probably going to have other issues up front, not to mention insurance billing. So I think that's a big one in terms of that. We also look at our firm. We look at what you're producing, what you're adjusting off. So when you take that differential, so you go from gross production to net production, and you compare that number to what you actually did collect, those better be close.
Really close.
There's going to be a timing difference here and there and whatnot, but those better be close. So if it's a massive numbers and you're overwhelmed and it's all about timing differences, right?
Yeah.
You're producing in this month, you're collecting in this month, this week, this next week. Nothing ever really lines up and you can pull your hair out. But if you kind of draw the line in the sand and measure that on a periodic basis, you can get a feel with your dental software report and your bank account. Number one, what is the money you should be collecting? And number two, are you actually collecting it?
Yep. That's great insight. Do you what's another kind of area that you feel like let's talk about like from an overhead perspective. You know, let's talk about that for a second. What areas what areas concern you or do you look at when you're talking about whether someone has an appropriate amount of overhead?
Reese, you're doing a nice job of moving down the profit and loss statement.
We
started the top, now we're going to move down. Very good. Very good. So, I think overhead scares a lot of us. I'm going to say two things about that. One, we compile statistics on what average overhead numbers are for dentists because we have so many general dentist office, and we break those out: general, oral surgery, ortho, endo.
Yeah, you don't want to just talk about overhead as a general number.
Specialties really do vary.
Yeah.
So, but number one, looking at your overhead compared to other offices. And generally here in Arizona, it's been around 60%, give or take a little bit, over the last few years. That's pretty stable. We break that out by categories like your staff, lab and supplies, advertising, some of those main things. But looking at here's where I'm going with this, your loan payment.
Yeah.
And here's the overriding comment. Not every practice has a loan payment. Some people have their debt paid off, some that don't. There will come a day when you do pay off your loan. I mean, it does happen. But that is not considered true by the definition of overhead. So when you talk about overhead with people,
got to back that out.
You got to be careful that total number does not include that loan payment. Now, it certainly affects your cash flow. You factor that in. But when you look at overhead, it doesn't include interest, doesn't include depreciation, doesn't include amortization. Those are the three musketeers that make up what you can write off on your taxes for your loan payment. So, number one, I think, with overhead is make sure you're comparing apples to apples, because a lot of people, what's my overhead? Well, what does it mean? Well, what is everybody else's?
That's great insight. Let's talk a little about in that area. What do you think? Do you see any mistakes people make with their payroll expenses, with how those can inflate over time, or how people maybe might undervalue employees in some cases and not be willing to pay appropriate wages, or maybe they are overvaluing certain staff people, paying more? Or do you ever see stuff like that happen with how dentists think about payroll and any insight into that? It seems like for us it's just a big burden that we hear about a lot is, am I doing okay in this area? And I'm just curious to your perspective generally about it.
That topic comes up when I'll show up with the report and we'll look at their overhead, and they look good on every area except payroll.
Uh-huh.
And here the discussion begins with, how come the average hygiene is 8% and you're at 11%, doctor? How come you're 3% more on office salaries? And then the discussion starts, and the easiest way to lower your overhead is cutting your lab and supplies.
Yeah.
All the other stuff, you can cut and it's minimal effect, but you can save some money there. Unfortunately, cutting your staff costs, if they're too high, is not that easily done, because you've got to go through the whole process of what does this person do? How are they adding value?
It's a difficult conversation sometimes.
It's a hard conversation, because yeah. I know doctors that have a team member who is overpaid by industry standards. They will never do anything.
They will never let them go. Yeah.
And this person is great.
Yeah.
They do so much.
So in some cases, it's okay to pay a little bit extra that makes your life better for a lot of reasons.
The doctor has to be able to quantify that, feel good about that. But I think the key word there is awareness.
Yeah.
So that's kind of comment number one, being aware of who the A's and the B's are.
Yeah.
And if you have C's and D's, you got to address those right away.
Yeah.
I mean, the A's and the B's, hopefully you're getting more good than bad, right? Not every employee is perfect, but if they're contributing more good than the issues, maybe this is the best it's going to get. I mean, Jack Nicholson, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah.
With that person. So that's kind of a constant thing with awareness. I think the key thing with employees, and this is may not be an answer to your question, but I always say this when it comes to those employees, you got to be doing reviews. And you got to make it formal. Don't make it as formal as you can, even if you're an informal person.
Yeah.
And laid back and, you know, hey, try to make it a little more formal. Write down what the employee's strengths and weaknesses are. Pull that paper out 6 months later, a year later, and say, all right, these were the things we talked about that you were going to work on. How's that going?
Yeah, that's great insight. Okay, if we keep going, if we talk a little bit about after we get down, think through some of this payroll stuff. What about marketing? Like, do people have it seems like there's a pretty wide range of philosophy on what I should do with marketing. Some people look at it as a percentage of their overhead and they kind of blindly spend a certain amount of money on it. Some people are very thoughtful and spend a great deal, and some people don't have any expense there. Do clients ever ask you about, like, what should I do for marketing, or what should I be spending on marketing, and how do you kind of respond to that?
The statistics say, on average across our practices, people are spending about 2.7% on advertising costs. That could be website. That could be gifts to patients. That could be ads.
Events. Mailers, whatever.
Mailers, postcards.
Yeah.
Giveaways at the office.
Mm-hmm.
It varies. So there's one number for you. Mm-hmm. Second thing is we did a survey on this with our clients and asked our clients, what are the most effective ways of advertising? Number one was word of mouth. Well, that's pretty general but obvious. Number two was sign up for insurance plans.
Yeah.
Number three was your location. And then number four, you start to get into website and social media. Postcards, newspapers were down the list.
And when was this? How long ago?
Probably a year and a half ago.
Wow, interesting.
Year and a half.
Yeah.
So people do ask. My comment on that is basically, that will vary by the doctor. Dr. A will not blink an eye to go write a check for $10,000 and put an ad in a magazine or do some, you know, pay for postcards or whatever. Dr. B would never do that. And their production is the same, and their collections are the same, and everything's the same. But it just depends on the doctor. But I'm a believer in trial and error. And I'm a big believer that I should be able to ask a doctor, hey, how many new patients did you have last month? And they should be able to tell me in 1 minute how many they had and where they came from. So, and that should go back 6 months to a year.
Yeah, that's a good insight.
You got to track that stuff.
Probably don't have a good handle on their growth and on their new patient numbers and what kind of patients they're getting from certain marketing activities, and seems like that's a neglected area for sure.
Wouldn't you want to make a decision on future advertising based on what's happening?
Yes. Yeah. let's talk a little bit about income. Once people, you know, end up with cash in their hands, they have to pay taxes, right? And no one likes that generally. And over time, it tends to be more painful than early on. And what's a general kind of, let's start with just some general thoughts on taxes and how a philosophy that you kind of have that you have, you know, about an attitude that, you know, people should have about taxes.
I would say that number one, we try to squeeze every drop out of the lemon that we can, meaning we're looking for every tax deduction that's out there. For a dental practice, I can tell you that we sleep great at night, but there are a lot of things out there that we can do. Now, the big home run things are things like equipment purchases, retirement plans.
Yeah.
Those are big time tax write-offs.
Yeah.
But there's lots of other little things. So comment number one, I think, in a general sense would be don't neglect the little stuff.
Yeah.
They add up.
It does add up. And a lot of times people don't go to the effort maybe of making sure all the little things are done. You know?
Yeah, that's true. The second comment I would have would be we don't like paying taxes, but nobody gets out of paying taxes. And so what we try to do, and a philosophy we try to teach, is you're going to have to pay tax, but let's try and pay it at the lowest rate possible.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can shift income, if we can time when certain deductions are taken, whether it's with equipment purchases, those kind of things can help maybe make one year a good year versus, you know, one good, one not so good versus two not so good years.
Exactly.
So those would be my two comments, I think, about taxes.
That's good insight. You know, and do you think it seems like in our experience, people have a pretty negative association with taxes, and sometimes that causes them to do things with their money to pursue avoiding taxes in a way that might not be good for them. You know, they might take on a second location when it may not be in their best interest to do so, just to minimize with taxes as the primary driver. Or they'll buy more real estate with the idea that if I can get some accelerated depreciation, or if I can do, you know, I could do a cost segregation study, but I got to buy a building first to do that. And so if I buy the building and then do a cost segregation study, I could save on taxes. It's like sometimes I'll buy some equipment because then I can save on taxes. I could buy a new car so I could save on taxes. But, you know, we're only saving 30 or 40 cents on the dollar. And if we're spending a dollar to save 30 or 40 cents, it's still 60 cents less than we would have had. Do you see that happening, or is that I see that a lot in my experience, and I just want to get your perspective on whether you feel like you have to temper people's emotions sometimes as they pursue tax, I want to call it avoidance, but, you know, tax planning, because they're trying to make sure they don't have that burden of writing a check, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, do you see that?
Yeah, this is where you insert the Seinfeld clip from Cray America, Kramer says, just write it off, Jerry.
Yeah,
it's a write-off, Jerry.
Yeah, just write it off. That is it's a convenient term to kind of throw at things, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's a write-off. I'll just write it off.
like it's just free money.
I'm like, you just spent $100,000 and you save 30 in taxes, but you know, the other 70, be nice to keep those in your pocket.
Exactly.
Keep that in your pocket. But no, I think the mentality is it's a mental thing. And when we tax plan with our clients, and we're meeting with them in November, end of the year, doing our third quarter meeting, and we're looking at projected income, and I say, well, you're going to owe. You've had a good year, and you're going to owe another $30,000 in taxes. You know, a lot of times they comment, well, what should I buy?
Yeah, exactly.
What should I go out and buy to lower that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with, you know, engaging in the appropriate purchases that make sense for your ad, and I think most people justify expenses a lot of times based on the tax savings, and, you know, it's still reducing your net worth in a substantial way. Because when I go buy a piece of equipment and I finance that, I might have gotten a bonus depreciation expense for that, but I have interest expense, I've got opportunity cost. I mean, there's a lot of other expenses, but if I didn't need that asset, if I didn't really need – to buy that piece of real estate or to buy that piece of equipment or to buy that vehicle, even though I got 40% off, a lot of times the storage cost, the carry cost, I mean, the opportunity cost of the what I could have done with mm-hmm. the money alternatively, you know, I just think people need to be a little more thoughtful sometimes about that. And I think it's why you're, when you meet with your clients at year end, you know, I can, it's really, it's important to have that dialogue, you know, because it, you can help temper maybe the decision and point it in the right direction, you know?
Yeah. I think the first, you know, the first response to that would be, do you need it?
Okay.
And the follow-up question to that is, will it help you increase production?
Yeah.
So if the doctor can answer those two questions, and sometimes they kind of lie to themselves and talk themselves into it. Oh, yeah, this is going to help. And
yeah.
But, you know, after I leave or after they kind of think about it, maybe I think, well, maybe it won't be that big of a boon. But if they need it, if it's going to help increase production, and I'm always going to put in their retirement plan.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want a place to put the money, notice what those two things have in common, retirement plan and capital investment. That keeps the money in your house.
Yeah. Your net worth increases.
Yeah. Keep it in your house. And if you're not sure on equipment purchases, and you're stretching, get on the bus and go get a retirement plan set up and put that money in there.
Yeah.
If you're not sure about that and you're not sure about the equipment, pay the tax.
Pay the taxes and keep the money.
Keep the money. And let's go to next year. Let's have another good year.
Yeah.
And something else will break, you'll go to the dental convention and you'll see something else that you'll need and buy that there.
That's a great attitude. I think that's a great insight. When people ask you about overall financial advice, they say, "Look, what should I be doing for retirement? Or what should I be doing for what do I need to do? You know, for what's some general advice you'd have for people about what you'd consider to be best practices when it comes to retirement planning? You know, I'm just curious from a CPA's perspective, you know, how you see the world that way.
Well, I'm biased because I love the tax write-offs of a tax-deferred plan, whether it's a simple IRA, a 401k, defined benefit, or even just a traditional IRA.
Yeah, you kill two birds with one stone.
Amen. I'm always going to bring that up. And some of my clients don't like that. Mm-hmm. They want to take their money and buy real estate. They want to go invest in mutual funds, give it to their brother-in-law who's developed a new line of
whatever
hair gel or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, so number one is I'm going to, no matter how old you are or how much money you have, do something.
Mm-hmm.
I met with somebody yesterday. She's 29. Put $5,000 in an IRA. Just get something going. So you can, so you're used to it. I think you get in the habit. That's a mental thing of every year I need to put something away for retirement.
Yeah.
And so that's my kind of idea there. In terms of your question of overall financial planning, I say this: you really control only two things at your practice. You think you control more, but you don't. You control the checkbook.
Okay.
And you control the patient experience. The patient experience is a little broad. That could be, you know, their financial experience, the clinical experience, the physical experience of how the office looks.
Yeah, the ambiance.
The ambiance. You have control over that. Now, your team members, sometimes you kind of do and you kind of don't, but they might say something, but they're an extension of you.
Yeah.
And so doing your best to make that the best is part A. The checkbook you control too. You decide where the money goes.
Yeah.
You can cut costs. You can increase costs. Other than that, you don't control who comes in the door. You don't control a patient's accepted. You know, that's what I think a lot of dentists, and this is a theory me and you have both heard in our lives, control what you can control. The stuff you cannot control, don't worry about it. Don't sweat about it. Do the best in your area. So it applies to finances too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's not an area that's easy to self-direct and tackle. It's a pretty, otherwise, I don't know what I went to school for so long to do, you know. You probably think the same thing. If it was easy to figure out, I don't know why I went and got it. You got a master's degree, okay? It's like, I don't know why I do this. Anyway, so, I think a lot of this has been super insightful. I think what I'd like to do is just let you kind of leave leave the listeners with any kind of overarching takeaways that you feel like you want to leave after all this. We've talked about overhead, we've talked about staff, we've talked about marketing and financial planning and taxes and income and revenue and collections. And I mean, clearly you've got some great experience, super broad. What's kind of one or two takeaways that you'd want to leave people with?
I would say paralysis by analysis is on the one end of the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum is the guy that shows up at my office once a year and just says, make sure I don't go to jail. So in your mind, draw a timeline or a continuum, I guess, of too much to not enough. That happy medium in there, I think, sits on a couple principles. One is quarterly analysis. I think monthly is too much. Too many things change month to month. But if you can get a financial statement each quarter and do that on a regular basis, you will start feeling a lot better about the financial health of your practice and know what the numbers mean. So a quarterly analysis. Number two, tax planning. I think so many people call me in March and April upset about the tax bill, and it ruins their whole year. It sets them back maybe 2 or 3 years because they haven't planned for that. And so proper planning can save 2 or 3 years of stomach ache from, you know, writing a $40,000 check that you had planned for something else.
That's great insight.
So, and then I think number three, this is a very general thing, but we deal with private practices, and you know, you walk around the convention here, you see corporate places. There's this a lot of talk and chatter about working for a group versus working for yourself. And so many people, I think, would like to work for themselves, but the number one thing that kind of scares them away is the money, the financial part of it. I think another thing might be dealing with staff,
management.
Team member, management of the other people.
It's a little intimidating.
I can tell you that you can learn, you can be trained, you can develop the skills to be able to financially run your own practice, and you can make more money than working for someone else. Now, money isn't everything, but if you've got that entrepreneurial spirit, if you've got that desire to be your own boss, to practice the way you want to practice, to help people the way you want to help, then there are opportunities. There will continue to be opportunities. Corporate dentistry will never take over, or you know, we're not all going to get sucked into this big vacuum.
Yeah, I mean, there's a level of service that can be provided by a really hands-on professional that can't be provided at the same level from abroad. You know, and I think, you know, you're a good example of that, of how, you know, there's some very large national CPA firms, you know. H&R Block can prep your tax return for you too, okay? But there's a huge difference. And just because the fact that there are big national large CPA firms doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't a marketplace for a high touch, highly qualified niche market professional, right? And that's what dentistry is in a sense as well. I mean, there's a market for getting your teeth cleaned for $29 somewhere, and then there's a market for an owner doctor who knows his few thousand patients and has a good handle on who the families are and has been with them for 5 or 10 years, and the market's willing to pay more for that level of service, and even if it's more expensive, there's a market for it. And I think sometimes people, like you said, they're fearful of going out and doing their own thing, becoming an entrepreneur dentist, because of those other intimidating factors. But wouldn't you say dentistry, of like almost any startup business, there's probably a fairly high amount of qualified professionals to support, you know, those dentists, and more than, I mean, if you go, you can go start a bakery out there, go start a bakery. You're not going to find CPAs that are, I mean, there's a million bakeries all over, but within dentistry, for some reason, there's a lot of qualified niche market professionals that are there to support these guys at not a big cost. So it's just not a real, And I think you hit the nail on the head with keeping a positive attitude about this entrepreneurial opportunity. You know, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic.
I think so. And, you know, one thing, dentistry is done well, and I think this is a newer thing, is they're trying to take the fear out of going to the dentist. So going to the dentist, you know, becomes more of a happier thing, you know, because a lot of people are scared to go, but, you know, the music and the way the office looks and the friendliness, all those things help to make it more an inviting experience.
No question.
I'm thinking about if we could just incorporate that into our tax practice. But I don't know if nobody likes talking taxes.
It's not that fun.
People don't like
finance. It's the most boring job in the world. So, I mean, we got to learn something from those guys.
We'll get a you know, some nice music in our office.
Yeah, a little lawn music, a little foot massage. Yeah.
You'll love getting your taxes done.
All right, Bill Owens, everybody. Anyway. Great interview. Really appreciate all your time. We've covered so many subjects. I think this has been really helpful. So I'd like to just say thanks again for coming by.
Well, Reese, thank you. Thanks for the good work that you do helping, you know, these dentists who, you know, we help them make the money and manage or track the money in what you guys do, and helping them help grow the money and keep it long term. I think that's invaluable. So keep up the good work.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it, man. We'll look forward to another interview and hearing more about your success. How would people get in touch with you if they want to reach out and learn a little bit more or find out more about what you guys do?
Well, the phone number here in Phoenix is 602-995-0081. And then our website is OB, which stands for Owens and Bondell, obcpas.com.
Perfect.
So obcpas.com is the website.
obcpas.com. OBCPA or CPAs?
CPAs, plural.
obcpas.com.
Yep.
Bill Owens, we'd like to thank you again, and we'll look forward to catching up with you soon, Bill. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.